Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with greed. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And happy Halloween, everybody. As we record this, this is going to be the last episode of the month of October. So I hope you had a lot of fun getting out there, going to your parties, wearing your costumes. You know, the thing that I'm reminded of every Halloween is that a lot of the people that I know are the people who say they love Halloween because they can just be themselves. And I don't necessarily think it's because everybody wants to be, a sexy terrorist or a Dracula pun or something. I think it's mostly because a lot of the people that I know are people that I met because they had a hard time finding community anywhere else because they were deemed a little strange for everywhere else. And I was definitely one of those kids. I like dressing up like other people because I didn't like myself very much. But that's also why I decided to go out and seek out forms of community and being a part of things where I didn't have to speak up or be noticed. I kind of wanted to be a part of things on the outside, almost like a visitor, you know, standing at the back of the wall at the party. You know, I liked skateboarding because it gave me a sense that I was a part of a community without being a part of a team. Because I didn't really ever have any interest in being a part of a team. I kind of liked being the drummer in a rock band because I was at the back. I made a difference, but I didn't have to be noticed. What I was doing was noticed. So it was like a way of finding value in myself without having to present myself. Which leads me to today. And where we are today is we have got Haley Driscoll on the program, and it's a really great conversation, but she and I had some history that we had to work out before she even got to the garage. Take a listen. I could tell a million stories about things that I did wrong. There's a girl somewhere in Denver that I still wish I remembered her name. Because the very first open mic that I did here was I did Three Kings after I moved here from Michigan. I did Three Kings and I was super nervous because the room was comedians all with their arms crossed.
Oh yeah, sitting like 70 feet away from you.
Yes. Yeah. And so I was like, Jesus, this is going to be hard. And then so this girl went up and she was less stand up and more like sketch improv. Okay. And she was really funny. She had this really great material that nobody was laughing at, and so
sure.
I was sitting right up
it's
front trying to be helpful. And so I was laughing and clapping and doing everything I thought I was supposed to do. And then she ended, her closer was that she was doing, and you might even know this person. I hope you do.
I already have a couple names to ask you if it was.
I don't know her name. That's the problem.
Well,
her closer was a raptor.
Yeah, I know it!
And it's
Haley
five
Driscoll.
Stages. Okay. Haley Driscoll. Yes, yes. Okay. So
I love her. She is the most creative mind. God damn.
I loved her too. And I thought she was great. And then, so Nathan pulls me up to the stage. It's my turn next. And then I thought it would be funny if I pretended I had the exact same bit. And so I was looking at my notes and I said, and I started with saying I was going to do a raptor in the five stages of grief. But, like, I think it landed like I was making fun of her.
Sure.
And, but I wasn't. I was trying to make it look like, oh, we wrote the same thing,
oh,
and now
shit.
I gotta throw
oh,
this away.
Oh, that incredibly original and awesome piece.
Yes!
What parallel tracks? Weird, huh?
Yeah, and that's why I thought it was funny. I thought there's all, like, it's funny. And
yeah.
Then, but she did not think it was funny. And I could see the look on her face, like, fuck you, guy. And I was like, I wanted to find her afterward and say, I'm so sorry.
Haley Driscoll, if you're listening, he was trying to compliment you.
And did not do it at all.
Well, he was an idiot and he's sorry.
Yeah. And I'm still both of those things, but for different reasons.
Oh, yeah. She's super funny.
So there you have it. That was my conversation with Timmy Lasley all the way back in episode number 7. And so Haley Driscoll is on the show today. And we did indeed have a conversation where I attempted the impossible, which was explaining why I was sorry without also trying to really apologize. And take ownership of what I did. Because let's face it, you can have all the reasons in the world that you have for doing what you did, but if you're not willing to actually take ownership of the fact that you did something, then maybe you're not really sorry. At least that's how I took it. Now, we're going to get into a lot of things today. It's going to be a really great conversation, and I can't wait for you to hear it. But the apology portion is not one of those things. We don't get into it. We do get into a lot of other things, though. We get into Buddhism. We get into finding yourself. We get into trying to just make sense out of everything, which I think is what this show really tries to do when it does anything at all. Now, it's not a replacement for any kind of real therapy if you need something like that. It's more like an episode of Mr. Rogers with more cursing and less puppets. But I think that you'll have a really good time with it. So without further ado, here is my conversation with the amazing Haley Driscoll.
I'm stable.
Well, that's excellent. How did you get stable?
Oh gosh. Well, it's been a process.
Well, let's take it back.
Yeah.
Really far to the beginning
back.
of this whole thing. So, right. Like, where did you grow up?
So I was born in California, but I pretty much grew up in Arvada.
Mm-hmm.
Since I was like 6. And then I went to Arvada High School, and then I went to CU Boulder.
Hey.
Yeah.
So that was good for you, I bet.
Yeah.
Arvada's pretty cool. It's a
Arvada's
nice little
nice.
Place to grow up in.
Yeah, yeah. It's very quaint, very mm-hmm. cute.
Yeah.
Swanson Elementary, whoop, whoop. Yeah.
And it's only, like, what, 15, 20 minutes from downtown?
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's in the middle. And
yeah.
Like half an hour from Boulder.
Yeah, and those are the only two places you'd really want to go.
Right.
Because, I mean, fuck the Springs.
Right, yeah. Don't, I don't venture.
So what were you like, when you were small?
A baby?
Well, I mean, most babies are like babies, but I mean,
right,
what
right.
were you like?
Beyond the baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always been kind of a performer type,
mm-hmm.
And with pretty vivid imagination, I've always wanted to perform, and originally it was theater, mm-hmm. and it was dark theater, and I like dark, dark musicals, and, and then I actually, like, got
really hardcore depression starting in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me pretty like antisocial. And like one friend at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I still have that.
Yeah. I branched out a little bit. Like I have a few backup friends for the main friends.
Yeah. Well, because when you're a person with a depressive nature about you,
right,
what people don't like to talk about is that you are exhausting.
right. There's a lot more going on.
Yeah. It goes completely against everything that you're taught growing up. You know, the things that you're taught growing up is that, no, you're not a burden on anyone.
Right.
You are uniquely you. You yeah. are who you are.
Yeah,
and
just be you.
And it's okay. But the real answer to that is you are a drain sometimes and it's right. okay.
Yes. And that's also okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, but that's the hard thing to come to terms with because no one's going to tell you that to your face.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to tell each other that when they talk about you instead of to you.
Right. Right. Or when you're breaking up or fighting with them.
Yeah. What were your folks like? I mean, when you were going yeah. through, like, figuring out, you know, obviously the art stuff
right.
is a clue for some people. But I mean, what were they like when you started to exhibit, like, the darkness?
Darkness. Yeah, they were, they always knew I was artsy and dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
They got pretty worried though.
Yeah.
When it was actually in my senior year of high school that I got really, really depressed. And that was actually because, my favorite English teacher had committed suicide.
Holy shit.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. I just wouldn't leave the house, and like my journals were like all like very, very cryptic and like what's the point? And
yeah. Where was suicide in your thought process at that point already? I mean, was that even a thing that was happening around you? I mean, high school is usually about the time people first start encountering it.
Right. Death in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I remember it feeling really surreal. I actually like let out a big laugh when I heard the news. Cause I was like, what? That's crazy. Like that yeah. only happens in movies.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was no more laughing for a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really surreal. It just didn't feel real for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my parents were scared because they didn't know how to help because they had never like had any close suicide experiences in their life. So yeah, it was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's definitely one of the things that shaped me quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was a depressive kid. Like as a like a toddler,
right?
Because I have bipolar.
Oh yeah.
But I have the fun bipolar where I get to wake up some mornings and you know want to take a bicycle apart.
Oh, right. Like hypermania.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is the fun one because right. you can get a lot of shit done and yeah. do some cool things, but mm-hmm. then you know the low lows are yeah. you know, a real mother to get through as well.
Totally.
But I had that from when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
That whole thing of suicide being a thing,
mm-hmm.
I was aware of it pretty early on.
Yeah.
But as that kid who liked to put that on and wear it, mm-hmm. like, oh, this is who I am.
Right.
When it came home the first time. And a friend did it.
Yeah.
And, you know, didn't come out the other side.
Right.
It was like, shit.
Mm.
Maybe I don't want to die. Maybe I want a way out, and I think dying is the way out.
Right.
Maybe I'm afraid of change. Maybe that's what it is. Mm. But, I mean, coming to that conclusion is the hardest thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like... It's like people in a burning building deciding to jump.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's not their first choice.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
It's the one that presents itself that seems the most logical for the situation they're in.
Right, and the panic that you're in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and I it was weird, like, when I found out that some people have never thought about suicide.
Yeah.
When it's been such an obvious thought for me, at least since high school.
Yeah.
And it's like I've kind of broken it down more to, like, instead of the act of, like, actually my, like, killing my, like, the death of my body, more of like a desire to not exist at all.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit bigger than suicide.
Yeah.
Kind of.
It is. It yeah. is. Because the idea of not existing at all is easy if you think about
right,
it.
Right, yeah.
I mean, how do you get to the French Revolution?
Mm-hmm.
Because you weren't there.
Right.
What was life like then?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could experience that again.
Yeah.
All I got to do is make some, you know, very hasty decisions, and
mm-hmm.
and then there we are.
Right.
I'll be doing the same thing I was doing then.
Right. Yeah.
So your teacher commits suicide,
mm-hmm.
and it has that effect on you.
Yeah.
But then I imagine you have to go somewhere after that. Like that's going to be a catalyst for, you know, probably a series of dominoes
right.
for, you know, your well-being and things like that. When did you first discover that there was something in you
mm-hmm.
that needed attention? I mean, other than the, you know, the hungry vortex inside you,
right.
that's, you know, me.
The constant.
Other than the artistic one.
Yeah, after he committed suicide, I kind of realized that for me to, like, have a grip on reality at all, I needed to find some kind of higher power.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting because my parents didn't really push any religion on me. They were like, God may be there. Jesus Christ Superstar is a fun musical.
Right.
Gospel was cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a great place for me to, like, but I felt like there was an immediacy to it. Like, I need to figure this out now.
Right.
And I think especially because his funeral was held by his parents so my teacher's funeral was held by his parents, who are super duper Catholic.
Yeah.
And it was a downer.
Oh, man. Catholics have
Oof.
All of that on lock.
Yeah. It was like the guy was trying to be nice. He was like a priest.
Sure.
But he was pretty much like, this is like a big no-no. He's probably not in a good place, but God is good. Like, it was yeah. like so weird, and it made me mad. I was
right.
like, no way, what?
Let this person we're all here to mourn right. be a horrible warning for the rest of you.
Right.
Only the Catholics.
Gosh. Yeah, it was horrifying, and it made me mad, and it made me, like, afraid.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I also, this, my English, he was like my hero at the time. He was yeah. like, I was one of the weird kids who thought I was way better than all the other high schoolers. So I was like, Mr. Smith's my best friend. So it was like a total mind fuck.
Yeah.
So I was like, God, I got to get the bottom of this. Got to figure out why this is, like, okay. But not necessarily okay for me
yeah.
for me to do.
So where'd you land?
It's been a huge journey. I actually, in my process, I went more towards Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of like in the middle, like just more spiritual.
Yeah.
In college. And then I actually got in a really toxic relationship with a Greek Orthodox guy, believe it or not, which is like hardcore Christian.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Greek Christian.
It's very similar to Catholicism in a lot of respects.
Yeah, and the severity of it is very Catholic.
It's harsh.
Yeah. And it
super
was...
super patriarchal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the women go where the women go, and the,
yeah,
the men tell the women.
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me...
What? Cat's out of the bag now.
Yeah, that someone would, with that sort of a thought process, wouldn't be a great match for you.
Right? I know. I tried to make it work. I tried and I tried. Mm. And it actually, like, I stayed in it and I went to church and I read the books explaining what it meant and I like annotated it because I was like, God is love. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's what like the really basic books, they're like reading the pamphlet, like God is love. And I'm like, yeah, smoke a doobie with the dude. But it was not that, because it got to points where I found out that he actually was like, he thought Mr. Smith, my teacher, was a pervert, and I just didn't know. And he told me that like a year into dating. And I was like, wow, oh, you should have told me that earlier. and then I ended up trying to stay with him because he was like, you'll be fine once you're converted. Like, once you like get that God's and Jesus are the way, like, you'll be fine. Like, I know you're suffering right now. Mm-hmm. And I bought it for a while, and then I started cutting my legs, which is like, I throw up my, like, little red flags for myself.
Yeah.
Like, Haley.
That's one of those real fun ones for people in the know. I mean, cutting your legs, you can get away with cutting your legs
because,
you know, you're the only person that's going to see those.
Hell yeah.
So that's when you're serious about it.
That's not a cry for help, baby. Yeah.
That's a cry for feelings.
Yes.
I just want to feel something, you know, like maybe if I hurt myself a little bit, it'll wake me up and I'll recognize where I am.
Right.
And maybe I won't hate everything so much.
Yeah. Or it's like a terrible dream.
Worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is like trying to wake yourself up from a dream.
You know, all of that has to be really fascinating growing up in a kind of sort of irreligious household where it's just kind of like, you know, here's a bunch of ideas, and then when you see it from that perspective, it seems like it's got to be pretty fascinating.
Right.
Because I grew up, you know, in a really heavy mix of Catholicism and Lutheranism.
Ooh.
And so, you know, lots of body shame issues and just self-hatred
guilt.
And guilt.
Yeah.
Oh, so much guilt.
Guilt.
So much great guilt.
Oh, guilt up the ass.
But, I mean... That's actually what led me away from the church, was getting so involved.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. Being forced to involve, or assuming that you will. Yeah.
Yeah. And just, you know, doing all the research and like, oh, this is so awesome. I want to know everything. Right. No, you don't. No.
Yeah. No. You never get the real answer.
Yeah. You want the good stuff. I mean, the only way that it really works is if you take the things that still make sense. And you hang on to those pieces. And then, you know, the bits about, like, throwing rocks at women who are wearing blended fabrics. I mean, you maybe don't keep those
parts. Leave it out.
Yeah. You don't need those bits anymore.
Right, not
anymore.
And
so people who say that it can't be watered down, I said, well, maybe a little water.
Yeah.
You know? Come on. Maybe a little water. I don't know if all of this is, you know, real or fake, but I know you're... book's got a lot of problems.
Right. Let's add up. You know, let's just agree on it.
Can we do something else? because it is old. Yeah. There isn't anything else I can think of that's that old that we still go, that checks out.
Right, yeah, like some safety procedure.
Yeah. No. I mean, at least with Buddhism, the thing that I liked about it was that it never really said that it had the answers.
Right. Yeah, that's most of the Dharma teachers. I actually ended up with Buddhism, believe it or not. I'm a Greek Orthodox / Buddhist. I made it work on both ends.
Sure.
We're married. We're fine.
Again, I mean, if you take the bits and pieces.
Yeah. They're like very, I think of every religion, there's like at least one very beautifully poetic, well-spoken, maybe not Scientology.
Maybe not.
I'm going to leave Ron L. Hubbard out of this.
There's got to be something in Scientology that's fun.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise.
Handmaid's Tale, that the main lady is
yeah,
Scientology.
She, oh, that's right. That's right. She is Jason Lee, Giovanni Ribisi. Right. You know.
There's great actors coming out of Scientology.
Well, let's calm down. I don't know about great.
They're making it.
Yeah, they're fine.
They're working the
they're
system.
They're fine. You know, Elizabeth Moss got to eat. God bless her.
Yeah.
But Handmaid's Tale is fun.
I actually can't watch it now that I know.
Yeah.
Because it adds a whole new...
It does. It doesn't that
out.
Seem strange?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll admit to the fact that I watched the entire first season, and it was basically just misery porn.
Oh, I did too.
And then I haven't watched the second one because right. I can't bring myself to invest my time in something, you know, so... I mean, I watch the news. It's kind of the same.
Yeah.
It's very similar.
I know. Yeah. I totally agree. It was like Saw for sad women.
Yeah.
And there's enough of that. Like, I'm already afraid to leave the house. So.
Yeah. I identify as a sad woman, mostly.
Yeah, I knew you'd get it.
That's pretty much how I've been my whole life.
Right.
But you go through all of those things. You look for a higher power. You
right.
ultimately find something. Are you a medication person?
Yes.
So you do both. You figured out the
and
the
I
magic
drink
balance.
And I smoke.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you gotta have a variety of tools.
Yes. Yeah. I actually had a very bad experience with medication.
Yeah.
That ended only like 2 years ago, mm-hmm. Where I was prescribed Adderall.
Oh my God.
And yeah, I went insane.
I can't imagine that working well with what I've seen of your personality.
Yeah, no, I was not. I could not handle the power.
Yeah. Wow.
It was a nightmare, and it like completely like obliterated my life for a second. I had to go to inpatient psych hold for like suicidal ideation.
Yeah.
This was like 2 years ago. And it was just like really like I don't know how psychiatrists just like are like, here, you have trouble focusing at your shitty job. Here's this amphetamine.
Yeah.
You're sad and you're in a relationship that you hate. Here's an amphetamine.
Right.
And I'm like, and then so for a while, and that was actually when I was getting into spirituality. But guess what? Adderall gives you a false sense of confidence and like clarity of thought. So like right when I'm starting to get like real into Buddhism, this was like a year into moving to LA, I thought that I was like, I just needed Adderall to be enlightened. Like,
yeah,
what the fuck.
Yeah, Adderall will do it. I mean, you know, I don't have any sort of deity in place, but you know, the times I did Adderall for fun was because I had things to do.
Right. Purpose and like you have like a mission and
yeah.
That was also the first time I ever did medication.
Oh really?
She put me on Lexapro and Adderall.
Wait, holy shit! You were on both of those things at the same time?
Yeah.
That's
I know
crazy.
Yeah, and
for
and she's
lack
like
of a better word, I guess.
And I told her my sister has bipolar.
Yeah.
And I read on the internet that it's a risk.
Yeah.
If you have for mania, like to induce mania. And as you know, you have one episode and that's you for that's all you need. And so I had a manic episode on Adderall. But she really just like bypassed. Now I have a great psychiatrist who would never in her life prescribe me any sort of like upper or even a benzo, but everybody needs what they need, but it definitely.
Do you talk to your psychiatrist?
Yes.
Like about things like
for for my psychiatrist, I talk about like 20 minutes a month, like every 3 months.
That sounds about standard. Do you have a psychologist as well? Or anyone you talk to about like, you
day
know,
to day?
The deeper stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like deeper conversations.
Yes, I do. Psychotherapist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's the way to handle it. I mean, that's the only way it works. I don't know why more people aren't told that.
Right, because you need someone to be able to ask you the right questions.
Yeah.
Like, and to be able to tell if you're heightened.
Yeah.
I had no idea about being heightened. I was just like, this is me being myself, which is kind of true, but yeah. No, mania is fun, and I think that's you. Like, it's dangerous. It can be dangerous.
Yeah, it can be really dangerous. Mm-hmm. I've gone through several periods of mania where I wasn't really aware of what it was.
Right.
You know, before I even had a diagnosis on it. I mean, I spent a lot of years seeing a psychiatrist with no psychologist to keep track of, you know, anything that was going on. And so when I was on, a serious cocktail of drugs, I didn't have any way of navigating those waters.
Right.
It was just, here we are. And then next thing I know, I'm calling my high school guidance counselor at 3 a.m. wanting an audience with the school paper because I feel like I solved racism.
Wow. Yeah. That's a mess.
Yeah. That's mania.
Yes. That's mania.
I think it's okay. I think
Sorry.
Yeah. No, it's all right. It's just, we're probably making it worse by touching it.
Okay. I'll stop that's touching right. it.
You're okay. Cool. All right. We're good.
We're good. We had a little mania.
But I mean, going through all of that and coming out the other side of it, I mean, how has, because I'm really fascinated by this, how has Buddhism been like for all of this?
Yeah.
Like how do you activate it?
Totally.
With everything else.
The powers.
Yeah.
The Buddha Dharma, the Bodhicitta powers. Yeah, it's been really cool. You said it earlier, it's like one of the only religions that it like prefaces like, feel free to ask questions about this and like have doubts. If you have doubts, like think about them, and like if that doesn't make sense to you, you don't have to apply that part of Buddhism. Which is like so open.
Yeah.
And which is kind of was kind of necessary for me because it's such a vulnerable subject, and it really started in outpatient right after my inpatient, because inpatient was a nightmare.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I've got inpatient stories too. Oh, fun.
Yeah.
How old were you in inpatient?
This was 2 years ago, so I was 27.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
See, that's obviously going to be different than my experience, because I was probably about 16 or so. So
ooh, there were some kids in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think about it now, and yeah, I was a baby. I had no idea what the
they
fuck
looked
was going
like
on.
Kids. Yeah. There was a young guy that was 17, and I felt so bad for him because he was on so much acid. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And he thought he killed somebody.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. But his dad had recently died, and he, like, went on a bender, and he thought he had killed somebody.
An acid bender?
Yeah.
Oh, that
so he had been tripping
changes.
For days and days. I'm like, I thought I was scared.
Yeah.
I'm just withdrawing from Adderall.
Acid is like CRISPR without direction. I mean, it's just going to rewrite you.
Right. I know.
I know a lot of people that changed a lot.
Yeah.
I thank goodness I never had any serious side effects from acid. Although I will say this, I did have one acid flashback.
Ooh.
Years and years after the last time I took it.
Really?
The one acid flashback I ever had. I was, and this is a great one. Everything in this sentence is terrible.
I can't wait.
I was on my way to pick up my kids from my ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a dragon in the sky.
Oh, what?
And I was like,
oh. Oh, shit.
All right. Well, how do I know any of this is happening?
Oh, man.
Yeah, and then, you know, they got in the car and...
Yeah, you're like, I'm dreaming?
Look, let's just go home. I know we were thinking about going some other places, but Daddy can't drive right now.
Daddy's sick.
Yeah. Daddy's not well. Let's put on the Hobbit and, you know, just see where it goes. Let's...
Oh, man. That sounds so stressful.
Yeah, so that was interesting.
Yeah.
It was a good time. What are you going to do, you
right,
know?
I mean...
You gotta.
You just gotta go with it.
You gotta go with it. There's there's not a lot you can do.
Right.
But it sounds like there's a lot of from what I understand mm-hmm. about it. It sounds like there's a lot of learning how to accept silence
mm-hmm.
and learning how to accept yourself.
Yeah. Right.
By accepting how little you are.
Yeah.
And to be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
See, all of that sounds great.
Yeah. It can sound silly because it's so simple.
Yeah.
And, but it always, like, the confusion of life will come back to, like, wanting you to be, you want to be simple.
Yeah.
And it has such a, like, yeah, an accepting nature that, like, where you are right now is just where you're meant to be.
Yeah.
And it also has, like, I've gotten much more into Tibetan Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets into the details of rebirth,
uh-huh.
Which I originally thought was kind of more of a metaphor or like a long con idea. Like, okay, your body goes in the ground and then it's dirt, sure.
Yeah.
And then you're reborn as a grass, okay. But like in Buddhism, it's like you have a mind stream that it's a consciousness that actually will go to another realm, dependent on your karma. And that's just like how much you tried to be like conscientious of other beings. And it's actually like super duper comforting thinking of suicide because I'm like, I'm not going to die. I'm going to.
Yeah.
It's going to be, I'm just going to make it longer for myself.
Sure.
Which sounds like very out there explaining it.
But you'd be taking some karma hits on the suicide though.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this, here's...
So, I mean, you gotta be really good for a while.
Yeah, yeah. You gotta be very virtuous.
Yeah.
Well, the idea is that even, suicide though, in Tibetan Buddhism, you don't go to a hell realm. Mm-hmm. For suicide, you would go to probably, if you were really, really good and like your circumstances were like really unfortunate, mm-hmm. like the universe was just like, oh, fuck you. And but you're a really good guy.
Yeah.
You might come back as another human, or you would come back as a dog or a cat with like a really good family.
Yeah.
You get like a shot at having a consciousness that is less overwhelming and less, or like equally, you get the same cards.
Yeah.
Because there is also a thing that's just called unfortunate circumstances.
Sure.
Of the collective consciousness. And it's not necessarily your fault that you like got all your money stolen and then your wife got shot in the face and you, and then your kids went missing. Like, and then you commit suicide.
Yeah.
Like there's going to be like a forgiving kind of force that I have like developed faith in that will be like, okay, then you get to be a doggy.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be the best?
With a really good family.
family.
Why would you want to come back as a person?
I know, it's
that
a
seems
lot.
Like the worst.
It's a lot of responsibility.
Being a person is terrible.
It
there's,
is.
There's so much shame,
right?
And so much thoughtfulness that has to go into things, and then there's dealing with other human beings and all of
that's
their
the worst
shame
part.
And all of their baggage.
Yeah,
I mean that's. That's the hardest part about all of this is learning to not only accept other people, but learning to accept yourself.
Yeah.
That's been the hardest thing forever for everyone.
Right. And to like forgive yourself, but not enough to like become a like total like schlub.
Yeah.
And then.
I mean, you don't want to rest on your laurels. I mean,
right. Yeah.
You know, you're only as good as the last thing you did.
Yeah. I good mean, point.
That's fair enough. Yeah. I mean, it's I feel like there's a lot of terrible people out there who were given the wrong information.
Yeah.
And they're terrible because they were given the wrong information.
Right.
And
delusions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so karma for people like that, in a way, that's sort of beautiful because it's like you're going to get another chance to live in such a way where you're more aware.
Yeah.
Because ultimately that's what you hope for those people. Not that they get hit by, I mean, some people.
Right.
Most people.
But if they were, or before they were that terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think ultimately if you think it through to its ultimate conclusion, I think most people prefer Hitler embraced painting.
Right, yeah.
I mean, if you really have to think it through to its conclusions, it's
like... If you
like,
could either go back and kill him, like, violently, or, like, get
him
into him painting
in right
school.
Ways. Yeah, exactly.
What should you do?
What should you do? I mean, I don't know. Either one kind of works, but then again, we're getting into paradoxes then. It's like, then... Like, I think about myself and all the decisions that I've made in my life that have led me up to the point where I am now. And I think of the things that could have happened to me that would have been better.
Sure.
You know, the record deal with the band or focusing more on acting, staying in L.A. and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, at various points in my life, I think about those things.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be where I am now, and I wouldn't probably have the sense of self and the self-awareness that I have now, which I certainly didn't have then.
Right.
If I hadn't lost some things, reflected on some things, and made a lot of decisions to be better.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I couldn't have been a better person if I hadn't gone through all of that nonsense.
Yes.
Or maybe I would have found it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I guess either way, it's best to just be grateful for what this is.
Yeah. And to like accept it for what it is and also be grateful that you had a degree of like non-attachment to move on and grow.
Yes. Yeah. Attachment is really damaging.
It's a motherfucker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we like, as humans, we have like three responses, basic responses to things. And it's like, it's attachment. Like, we really like something or we love somebody and we want it forever and we don't never want it to end. Or aversion. And that's where like hatred and like disgust come from. And we're like, yuck, that's not my team. Democrats only. And then there's neutral.
Yeah.
And usually if we let that slip, that goes into ignorance.
Yeah.
Which also leads to like a whole bunch of other problems.
Yeah.
So it's good to be able to acknowledge like, oh, I like have been through so many things and was able to like get out of it on the other end and learn a lesson and go on to the other thing and remain fluid. It's so healthy to like be able to grow and acknowledge how you've like where you've come from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a revelation today that I like quite a lot, and I'll share it with you.
Yes, please.
And the revelation I had was that the the low feeling of depression and recognizing those thoughts. Like, if you're a depressed person, you have suicidal thoughts on a regular basis, whether you want them or not. Right. They come in, and if you're in a good mood, they don't even necessarily alter your mood.
Sure.
They come in, and you go, oh, I wonder if I could get in front of that bus. Mm. You know, or would it hit me hard enough to die? Or how far would I go flying? How hard would it hurt? You know, you think about these things, these weird, morbid things, and you think about them. And if you're in a good mood, it can be amusing, or it can be a distraction, or it can be, well, that's just, you know, that's as irrational as thinking I'm going to go tame a unicorn.
Right.
You know, it's this suicidal thought is just as likely as that.
As any other thought. Yeah.
Right. So now you have these things. But when you're in the middle of your depression, it seems like the building is burning. And the only real option is to jump.
Right. It's a viable.
Yeah.
Like.
But then you come out of the depression and you're able to see it the way that you would see a horror movie.
Yeah.
With the lights on.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. The difference it makes when you're watching a scary movie by yourself with the lights off or with the lights on.
Right.
Because you are watching it by yourself. Mm-hmm. I don't care who is in your life, who's helping you, who's there. Yeah, you're watching it alone.
Yeah. They don't have the urgency, the lead up to it.
Yeah.
It's even when you come out on the other side of it, it is totally like a horror movie where it's like, don't put that song on.
Yeah.
Why would you think about that about yourself when you just thought this about yourself? Like, if it was an actual narrative.
Sure.
It's very, it can, it can be very cruel when you're just in it. Yeah. And it's crazy how sometimes they're not even thoughts. Like, it's just the feeling.
Yeah.
I think that's when it's the hardest, when you can't even, because like I've done a lot of like cognitive behavioral therapy stuff.
Yes.
Where that's, it's like locate the thought and like as a percentage, how much do you think it's true?
Yeah.
But like the hardest part is where you're just like, there's like no thought. Yeah. It's just like, it's like a dark place you can trudge yourself into, which is like with the Buddhism, it's like try to be mindful at all times.
Yeah.
Don't slip. Don't get in your But it is very natural to do, like, especially when you've been a depressive person since a young age.
Yeah.
Those like creaks and eddies of thought are like deeper. So it's like you need to be more cognizant that you can go that dark. Yeah.
So what did your inpatient experience teach you about you?
Oh, my God. I'm not that crazy.
Right? That was the thing I learned the second time I went in. The second time I went in, I learned, they're not here to fix me.
Right.
They're here to teach me how to fix myself.
Right.
And also, I should not be here.
I know, right? God. Yeah, I was so confused, like, before I went in, because the guy evaluating me was like, are you sure? And I was, like, having an anxiety attack on 2 extra Adderall. So that was, like, 60 milligrams, like, speed.
Yeah.
And they're like, you need to pee in this cup. And they're like, are you sure you want to die, lady? Because you're not going to die in there. We're just going to make sure you can't die. And like I was, and then my ex-boyfriend was also there.
Like in there? Like inpatient?
Yeah, right next to me. It was so sweet. He deserves ex-boyfriend of the year. And boyfriend of the year.
Was he in there because of you?
No, I like I was in there because of him. No, he because I was gonna walk to inpatient at like 2 a.m.
yeah,
because we had just broken up. That was also a thing that I was like, oh my God, I'm horrifically codependent and like super scared to be by myself. What do I do?
Yeah.
And that added to the mental break. It was like, Adderall, breakup of 4 years. Let's do this.
Yeah.
So it led to that. To be fair, the emergency room was like a 8-minute walk.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't have been like crazy. It would have been. I was crazy. It would have been kind of crazy. So he's like, "Let me drive you," and I was like, "No, okay, nah." And then I had to take all the weed out of my bag, and like they ended up taking everything. Wait a
minute. So he drove you there.
Yeah.
And then decided, you know, I could do this.
No, he didn't like stay.
Do you want to get? You know what? Do you want to just get a table?
I'd like it.
Yeah, exactly.
I could write a screenplay here. No, he was so sweet because, like, he drove me there and he asked me, like, "Are you sure you want to do this?"
Yeah.
And I, like, couldn't stay with him and I didn't want to go to my friends and I, like, didn't want to call my parents, mm-hmm. and I was just so scared, and I knew I wasn't going to kill myself because that wasn't really an option.
Yeah.
Ever since Mr. Smith committed suicide, I was like, whoa, like, that's going to screw everybody up forever. Yeah. Not that, like, it's like the guilt has been, like, so I was there and I, like, told the guy I have suicidal ideations, but what I meant was, like, I don't know where to go.
Yeah.
I don't want to be anywhere right now, which is equally horrifying.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what the end game of all of this is.
Right.
But I know that I can't touch reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that, like, he asked me, "Do you have a plan?" Mm-hmm. And I think I read online, like, they're not going to let you in if you don't have a plan.
Yeah. So you're like, I need you to let me in, so let's say yes.
Yeah, I was just like, I'm going to eat all these pills. You better let me in, sure. And it was like, and then my ex-boyfriend, he stayed with me while they were like interrogating me about if I actually wanted to be in there. I found out I, like you said, did not want to be in there. It was horrifying.
Yeah.
Like it was like co-ed, so... boys and girls.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it's not a bad idea to learn some things about yourself. I mean, it's unfortunate that you went through the experience that you did.
Right.
But at the same time, it's kind of fortunate you went through the experience you did.
Totally.
I mean, it's almost like smashing the idea home with a sledgehammer versus massaging it in, you know, with a little bit of oil.
Gently, slowly. Yeah, it was like the only time I was just like, fuck, like, my hands are in the air, I have no control.
Yeah.
At all. But it was funny because I tried to make Adderall work still for like the 3 months after. All throughout outpatient. Yeah. Ugh. Which is so funny because it was never just one thing. It was like a bunch of things.
Of course.
And I think that's what trips me out about like 12-step programs because they pin it on one thing.
Yeah.
And for me, it was just like I went to Codependence Anonymous. I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to Narcotics Anonymous and Marijuana's Anonymous.
What?
I know. I said, "I'm Haley and I'm from Colorado." And they were like, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah. Like, okay, we get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So my journey through getting off of Adderall and then not like binge drinking anymore, like only like when it's like my time off, like just like figuring out my schedule. My therapist still thinks I'm a highly functioning alcoholic and user.
Yeah.
He calls smoking weed using.
Yes.
Which is hardcore street.
But, you know, on the plus side, he did say high functioning.
Right. Like, thank you.
Yeah. That means you're able to deal.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Do better than he ever did. He's been sober since he was 20.
I mean, my dad is a substance abuse counselor.
Oh.
And so that's a thing that I'm always really hyper aware of. And I think that I probably have a touch of high functioning. as well, because, right. you know, it just runs in the blood.
Yeah.
And so, but I can't ever tell if I'm a high functioning alcoholic or if it passed me over and I'm just neurotic.
You're just, you're normal.
yeah.
Neurotic.
And I'm just really worried about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't tell.
I can't tell either.
What I can tell is, you know, I've never had to hide a bottle of booze in my car.
Right.
So I could get through lunch at work.
Right. Yeah, me neither.
You know, I can have a couple and quit and go home.
Yeah.
And stop drinking. I have a lot of friends that can't.
Yeah.
They can't have a drink. Right. They have to have all the drinks.
Right. Right.
But then I also have friends who are like, yeah, I drink a couple times a year. And I'm like, I don't understand that.
I don't understand that. That's my parents.
How do you talk to people?
Right. Do you go out?
Yeah.
My parents don't really go out. And I think that's like, oh, so you only drink at first bank events. Excellent.
So how did all of that affect your relationships with other people? I mean, I know that you had a fairly successful podcast, The Empty Girlfriend Podcast, of which I was a subscriber.
Hey, I also know
that it's not still going at the moment.
No.
So, I mean, how did that manifest itself?
Oh, my gosh. It's funny. I actually haven't seen Christy in 2 years, and I'm going to her show tonight to perform on it. And we're going to mouth-to-mouth kiss on stage. Yeah. Huge empty girlfriend making out on stage. But it's funny because it started tapering out after I got out of outpatient. And I think it was because my breakup got a little too real.
And just couldn't talk about it on air anymore, or like stop talking about it?
No, we never, because like me and my ex ended on good terms.
Yeah.
It's Chris Charpentier, everybody. Let's be fair.
Oh, yeah.
And we're still on good terms.
Yeah.
But I think like I realized that I had like severe codependency stuff that I didn't even really know how to process. Mm-hmm. And like my recovery took up more time, and it was like more like the dynamic had changed
with, yeah
oh Jesus with the sorry so I think it ended kind of naturally though
yeah
because yeah it was funny because me and Chris had a really good relationship, and I was pretty much in a relationship with him the entire podcast, and Christy was like on and off again, and it was like a good way to end.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I don't have time for it. We might start again.
Yeah.
Christy started a new podcast with Elise Kearns. And I'm going to punch her in the fucking face after I kiss her on the fucking mouth in front of everybody.
Well, I hope you don't hurt your hand.
Oh, I will. It'll be worth it. It'll be fine.
It sounds like you've more or less nailed a lot of shit down.
Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you. It feels that way. It looks that way on the internet, I'll tell you that.
Well, you can be whoever you want on the internet.
Right, yeah. I was fine the whole time on the internet. Maybe not after. When I shave my head, people are like, hey, it's not okay. I shaved my head when I was still on Adderall, and I was like 117 pounds, and I was like, I'm good. Everything's fine.
See, and my first thought was, like, you know, she shaved her head. She probably knows some really cool records to listen to.
She's in the vinyl. Good. Okay, good.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I thought about it.
Okay, good. My dad thought the caption and the picture was like a suicide note. And he called me like, who's crashed your car? Because the caption was, I shaved my head because I wanted to be a Western Buddhist nun, but I looked it up and that's not a thing, so I guess I'm not a thing now. What a weird suicide note.
Yeah.
Like, shave my head. No, I'm not a thing now.
Yeah. But I guess I'm nothing.
Yeah.
In a way, Buddhism does teach you that you're nothing.
Right. And it's like death is going to be
good. But it teaches you that you're nothing and that's okay.
Right. Exactly like everything else.
Thanks for talking to me, Haley.
Yeah, thank you. This was so fun, Chris.
And there it is. A really awesome conversation with a really awesome person. I feel a lot more centered after that. Don't you? Be sure to follow her everywhere you can follow a human being on these social media platforms. She's on the Facebook, she's on the Twitter, she's on the Instagram, and you can follow all of those things. We have links in the feed below. As for me, that's all I got for you this week. I really hope that you're all taking care of yourselves out there, and I've been taking care of myself out here, and you know what? I'm feeling a lot better than I was before. So take a little bit of advice from me. Find something that makes you feel good, do that, and don't kill yourself out there.